Ponzi scheme, pyramid schemes. We have the family members. And I'm saying family members because if you look at the scheme that people invested money in or put money in, the Mr. Herman Pretorius scheme, it was a trust registered with the Master of the High Court. That in itself clearly wanted to remove that vehicle away from regulation. Because they know that once a trust is registered by the High Court, there is no regulation. But he did not only create a trust and registered the trust. He went on to disguise it so that it looked like a CIS vehicle, a hedge fund type of thing, when it wasn't. Then why again I'm saying it's family members? I actually brought a copy of the registered trust deed here, and the members who put money in it. If you look at it, it looks like a telephone directory, because you have, under a surname, you have a whole list of family members. It's like, you know, it looks like a telephone directory. Other than that, because these people know that what they're doing is actually not legal, they also enter into confidentiality agreements with the supposed to be investors. Now, if you go and invest with a registered and credible investment manager, why would you enter into a confidentiality agreement that you will not disclose what you and I are doing? But of course, family members are family members. They always talk and say, I am making money. Please bring your money in. You'll also make money. And the reason is simple. People who go in initially do make money so that they go out and invite more people to come. Now, the challenge is, how do we eradicate the thing where family members are involved? We'll see as we move on with the presentation. And I think the second point we want to make is, you have communities also getting into this type of schemes. And by communities, it could be members of a specific church or members of a specific area. In Mr. Herman's Pretoria's case, it was both the church members, because he was a church leader, and he enticed members of the church and the people in the area where he came from. Again, you have people wanting to make money quicker, and of course, trusting people. You know, if you go to church with somebody and you pray together, you hallelujah together, you're likely to trust that person. And this is what is happening in the various churches. And I hope at some point this committee will have to look at some of the activities that the churches have embarked on. Many of the churches today are actually running funeral, in-house funeral arrangements, unregistered, unregulated. But what is not said, it was going to happen when the leader of the church or the administration of that scheme collapses. The other group that gets easily enticed here is the pensioners. Now, pensioners, when we talk about pensioners, we've got to draw a clear line. mean somebody who is on pension and somebody who loses pension assets or pension monies. Very often, the pensioners who get involved in this type of schemes are not the ordinary pensioner, the ordinary poor pensioner that you find walking in the streets. These are rich, well-off pensioners who do not rely on their pension returns for survival. They've got other monies which they would have amassed in one way or another during their working lives. And of course, that moves me immediately to the next point that says, we must also accept that there are greedy people out there who want to have more and more and more all the time. If I look at that document, which I earlier said that it looks like a telephone directory, I have gone through the names and the amount that they've put in. There is one individual in that list who has put in 9 million rand. I cannot believe that that was the only money that that person had. Otherwise, that person would have walked in here to say, committee member, parliament, government, I have lost money, I'm in the street. But these are people, very often, maybe not all, very often, who have money, and they want to go and use what they have to get more. And this puts you back to the Ponzi scheme that we saw a few, 2-3 years back, the tenant bar. Again, you go and look at the caliber of people who were in that scheme. It's high-ranking, well-off members of the society. But of course, the more money they make, the more they attract the poor of the poorest, who also would at some stage want to go there and see what are the, why the people are making money in this scheme. Why can't I go and try my luck? And that is where people lose their very meager savings as well. Who are the likely perpetrators of this deed? As I said earlier, these are people you have learned to trust over a long time. These are people who are like me, who have been, I may have been a registrar working at the FSB for the past many years. When I leave the FSB, I may go out there and start a Ponzi scheme. Can you imagine how many people will come because of the sentimental drive, say, he was a regulator, he must be good, we trust him. And yet, sentiments and emotions are the dangers that we've got to teach our people to avoid. They play on people's emotions. They promise high returns, as you said, and yet, eventually, nothing comes. And these people, once they've made their money, they run away. Either they run away from South Africa or they run away from the planet. In other words, they commit suicide. Mr. Hennen Pretorius is not the first one to commit suicide around this thing. We help them. In the fiduciary matter, a key individual that committed suicide. So, how do we eradicate the evil that is facing us? We'll come to that. Slide number 5 gives us a story that initially when these products are put before the people, they appear genuine, and yet they are not. They may appear like a hedge fund, and yet it's not. There is no transparency, confidentiality agreements just to block transparency. They all shrouded in secrecy. And people believe, because they tell, if you talk about it, too many people will come and there will be no high tents for you, because the cake will be small and too many people to share. We've put our thoughts here together to say, how do we begin to try and eradicate these evil operations? First of all, one has to mention that Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes, legally are not in the terrain of the FSB. They are a matter that the Central Bank of South Africa should be dealing with, because what the Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes are doing is taking deposits, so they are in contravention of Banks Act. Therefore, the Central Bank has to protect the provisions of that Act. And the bank has done so. It has investigated a number of them, including the tenant borrower. But of course, success on these things is not always easy. Because once you investigate, the people, as I said earlier, run away. Physically or spiritually, they do run away. The possible remedies that we possibly have to look at, I think for the investors who are already in the field of investing and already in the working market, we need to up our consumer awareness efforts so that we reach as many people as we can and warn them against pyramid schemes. As the FSB, even though I said earlier that the space does not belong in the FSB, but consumer awareness belongs to all of us, including the FSB. And this is why we believe that we need to partner with entities that are able to assist us to reach as many people as we can. And this is where we have a partnership with insurance industry players, but the most important partnership that we have is the one with the South African Council of Churches, because we believe that churches will help us to reach everyone in their own languages and in every corner of the country. And the ministers are helping us, and we've gone a long way on this project. We also believe that we need to involve ourselves more and more at the school level under financial literacy schools. And we've been doing this. And only last Friday, I had a meeting with the Deputy Minister of Basic Education, sharing the same sentiments of how do we eradicate the problems that our people are facing. And we have plans in place with him, and he's even allowed us for the first time as the FSB that he will put us in the curriculum of the schools and put some of our materials to form part of the textbooks, so that we bend these kids as early as they are now, so that we create a knowledgeable future generation of South Africa. He has also created a website where he said on that website, because kids and teachers will get access to that, he said, let us populate the website with education information so that we share as much as we can. And we also decided that we have to use the old systems as well, using posters. We need to print posters, put them at the schools against all these things. Kids and teachers must read these things in website, and they must also see these things on the walls and notice boards at their schools. But of course, committee members will ask me, what's new? These things we've been doing, but it's been difficult to see the results. On the financial literacy one, although we've been sending the information throughout the country, we have tended to concentrate on one province, the KZN province. And the reason why we did that is because the business people in the KZN and the MEC Finance, who she is a former MEC Education, have come together with the FSB to put a plan in place to get the schools in KZN involved in the financial literacy program, and to make sure that we monitor that involvement. We started the school competition of debate on financial issues and all these policies and all that. This year we had 900 schools taking part in that competition throughout the province. And that culminated somewhere in September where we had the finals. And I invited some of my board members to come and just be with the kids for the day, just to see the kind of progress we've made. They went there. And when you see what kids of grade 11 are doing and the knowledge they have on financial instruments and issues, it's humbling. It is really humbling. And we hope to spread that throughout the country. When I raised this point with Minister of Basic Education as to how do we spread this event, it will be possible to spread throughout the country at once. You need to take it province by province as you've succeeded. But this success, it's not only judged by what we see on the stage. We've also commissioned the study to demonstrate to us whether there's progress in this financial literacy program. And the results have come. We've made the report available to Minister of Finance, Minister of Education. That report demonstrates that kids between the age of 15 and 19, particularly in KZN, they have the knowledge of these things. The only problem is the implementation, putting that knowledge into practice. That tells us we need to possibly put more effort in trying to put these things into practice. We hope again that through the Twin Peaks project, we hope to achieve more than what we're doing at the moment. How we want to achieve that is, amongst the many things that we will be doing under Twin Peaks, in the legislation that we're going to put before Parliament, we're going to be asking that we've had too many players operating unregistered in the financial sector. We have to find a solution to make sure that every individual, every entity that wants to be in the financial sector space is registered, licensed, and regulated. To do that, we're going to ask the Parliament allows us to put a provision in the Twin Peaks overarching legislation, which we hope to bring early in 2013, that there should be only one entry into the financial sector. And at that door, everyone has to be tested for being fit and proper and demonstrate that the interests of the consumers are the primary requirement for all of us. Without that, we will still have people operating unlicensed outside the sector, and in that way make people lose money. The other issue is what we said the other day when we were here on Wednesday. We need to publish reports where we have investigated Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes, people must know how these things operate and how people have lost money. We need to make those things public. And of course, where we get hold of them, the penalties must be stiff. Other than the penalties being stiff, we need to find a constitutional way of having a list of perpetrators of this type of operations to monitor them and make sure that we get them out of the system. Either as they come back in the same name or when they come back in a different form. We've got to be working on the individual and make sure we have that list. But as I said, we need to find a constitutional way because the constitution is not always the easiest of pieces of legislation to comply with because it protects people as a whole, whoever you are, whatever you're doing. But we need to find a way of making sure that people are not exposed to the same people over and over again. Committee members, this is what we've put together at the FSD, and we hope that today, other than what we've put on paper today, we will get advice as well from committee members to assist us as to how we can get rid of this problem that is killing the savings of the poor people of the country. And that's our expectation, that we get assistance as well. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, made a presentation. Honourable Mteta, followed by Honourable Kuranov, Honourable Ross Luyenge, Honourable Harris.
Chair, let me welcome the presentation first, but my question is, what do you do with this bank where they even open up a special desk, if I can call it a desk, where people, where these pyramids operate? To me, this is a sign of acknowledging them. And other investment companies are coming from the internet side, and they even direct you which bank you must use. And those banks are responsible as a conduit of money into those countries. What FSB is dealing with, how are we going to deal with that? Let me put it that way. How are we going to deal with such crisis? Because the bank are promoting it as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. With due respect to my honourable member of the committee, I cannot applaud this presentation. You know, I've read the article to say that the FSB is creating an impression that they are being off duty and a sleeping watchdog, allowing thieves to slip by under its nose, and that there is lots of huff and puffing. That is exactly how I experienced this presentation this morning. I think the FSB's got plenty of legislation to support them to do their job. What I'm expecting from the FSB is a critical analysis of those legislation, and if you do not have enough powers, tell us. Approach us through the minister and this committee will assist you. If you think you're happy with your legislation, get a PSO, because there was no reference to that, then clearly I'm stating you're not doing your job. You've seen the Teriums, the Leader Guards, Share Maxes. Now obviously you will say five was not in place when that happened. But five is in place now. And since five, we've seen Fidentia, Panorama, as you have mentioned, the Kings, Albante, Pretorius, Tobago. I can carry on. There is even more happening as we speak. Now, I've got a trail of emails showing up that the whole thing with regard to Albante, the Pretorius affair, was reported to the FSB in May last year. It was puffing and puffing in the emails. And then in January, a confirmation that it will be investigated. What happened since January this year and June? I would like to know. I would like to know, and hopefully you will go to the various authorities and tell us what investigation was done. The unfortunate thing is, I think 4 or 5 months later, you were happy with the Pretorius matter and say it's okay. And then the tragedy occurred. Now that is just one example in the face of South Africa. Now, my question to you is, do you need more powers? And what are those powers? Then, finally, Mr. Dead Person, at a recent symposium organized by the FSB, there were lots of criticism coming from the service industry to say that they are being named and shamed by a few doers not doing their job. My problem is, I don't think the FSB is in a position even to name them, to tell them who they are. You can give me our table questions through the ministry. You can tell me thousands have been acted upon because they're not paying their fees. But I'm not interested in those guys. They're not stealing the money of ordinary South Africans. I'm interested in those guys in front of the ombudsman being investigated by still running around selling schemes like the Pretorius, Ferencius and Kings we've had before. What are you doing with regard to that? Do you have the powers? Yes or no. Do you want the powers? Yes or no. Just tell us.
Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also have a concern with regards to brokers within the system that are registered. Registered brokers that are promoting very high returns on investment. And then you find a situation like ShareMax situation, I believe that profit subsidy case, that you have thousands of investors being left in the lurch and waiting for perhaps a dividend or a very small dividend in terms of their money. Many of those people are also old age pensioners, and it has a devastating effect on their lives. And I find that I must add my concern to Honorable Gernoff's concern. I find it quite unacceptable that, you know, that we haven't got measures in place to be MPs. Measures that we or legislation that we need to put in place to protect the ordinary citizens of South Africa. With regards to regulate with the regulators and what we envisage, the Financial Services Bill offers very harsh measures, the proposed Financial Services Bill. Have you studied those proposals and what would the impact of these bills be with regards to investment and also with regards to how do you envisage the Twin Peaks model to be enhanced and adopted later next year, early next year, to remedy perhaps the situation. Thank you so much.
Not Blue Yange. Hello. Maybe in trying to enhance what the presentation may be seek to do, and of course with the understanding and experience that one has about what is entailed in this presentation. It's a real fact that our people out there, because of the trust that they have to a number of prominent people, including your church leaders, they lose a lot of money. In the past, we used to have, in the former Transkei area, pyramid schemes called the push-pushes. They were very prominent in areas like Butterworth, where the ones who come first get a lot of money, and those who come later, they don't. So maybe one must ask a question to FSB to say, now that they have identified these operations which are illegal, does the current legislation that they have have any gaps pertaining to them stopping this kind of behavior so that we can be able to empower them more? If they don't have that power, as it has been alluded to by previous speakers. We do that because we have seen this in practice. Then lastly, Chair, I would also want to get more elaboration on the part of SSP to say what are the institutions or behaviors in the financial sector that seeks to replace this kind of behaviors. Because the syndicates out there, they move with time, Jefferson. But OFSB has a responsibility to ensure that they always make sure that the laws or legislations at their disposal actually address the problem. So if there is no power that is there as of now, that must be clearly spelled out so that it can be addressed as a matter of attention.
Honourable Harris. Thanks, Chair. I have to join, I'm afraid, the Honourable Klonoff in saying I wasn't that satisfied with the presentation. I was really expecting a lot more detail in terms of analysis of the problem and why we have the problem, given the current set of laws which I've looked at and worked on, which I think seem to give us the tools to stamp out schemes such as this. But let me. I've got three sets of questions, Chair. The first one is around the Avante scheme. I've also got numerous emails from pensioners in particular who've lost their money in the scheme, and they're incredibly frustrated with the FSB. They also have a question Mr. Kuna asked about the state of the investigation. That's my number one question. I need to get back to these people, and I'm finding it very difficult to get any answers out of the FSB myself in terms of the status of that investigation and how it is that this Abante scheme managed to operate given the regulatory environment that should have whereby they should have been detected. Then, Chair, the general principle of this presentation is that we wanted the FSB to come and tell us what was going on with Ponzi schemes and what we need to do about them. But the first thing, one of the first things we're told is that actually they don't fall under the FSB because they're deposit-taking theory, they fall under the Reserve Bank. So, I mean, that's quite a way to begin the presentation, basically saying don't ask us, ask them. But then we go on to hear a whole lot of things about Ponzi schemes from the FSB, even though it's not their area of responsibility. So I just need some more clarity there. If it is the Reserve Bank's area of responsibility, then why don't you simply leave it to them, and why do we have them before us today? Then, under the existing laws that we have, particularly the Consumer Protection Act, which I worked on in my previous committee in Trade and Industry, I mean, my view is that the Consumer Protection Act goes into great detail on schemes such as this, and the Section 38 expressly bans pyramid and related schemes, including things like chain letters and things with various levels of participation. Under Section 42, it bans fraudulent schemes that entail misrepresentation or exaggeration of returns. Section 41 bans false, misleading or deceptive representations. And Section 43 details a whole list of structures that people may not participate in, including multiplication schemes, pyramid schemes, or chain letter schemes. My view is that the CPA gives us sufficient legislative power to tackle Ponzi schemes. So why, then, are you suggesting that we need additional powers? Surely the problem here is one of taking the powers we have and using them appropriately. If we simply apply the CPA, we have all the powers we need to eradicate Ponzi schemes. Lastly, Chair, the FSB said that there were four things they needed on their final slide. First one is that the provision in 20s where there's only one entry into the financial sector, and at that door everyone has to be declared fit and proper. And that's a quote from what was given to us. Can you just sketch out for the committee how the current system works?
in terms of, you're obviously implying that there's various ways of entering the financial services sector, and what the problems are with that current approach that require us to set up, as you call it, one entry into the financial sector. Secondly, the FSB suggested they need to publish reports once they have investigated Ponzi schemes. Well, that raises the question why they're investigating Ponzi schemes if it's a Reserve Bank responsibility, but nevertheless, if they are investigating Ponzi schemes, why don't they publish the reports? There's nothing legislatively that I know of that would prohibit you from doing that. If there is, can you let me know? Thirdly, they require that the penalties must be stiff. Aren't the penalties in the CVA stiff enough? How exactly do that fall short? And lastly, this idea that in order to publish a list of, if we post a list of offenders, we would somehow breach the Constitution. Can you let me know which clause of the Constitution it would breach if you were to maintain a list of offenders? I mean, surely, even if it isn't published, this is something that you or the Reserve Bank, whoever's responsibility it falls under, would maintain as a matter of due process. So, Chair, I have any questions about the presentation we have today. And in general, I have more questions than answers.
Daly?
Thank you, Chair. I think the last honourable member of committee who spoke, I think he's given many questions, but in the questions he's also given a holistic answer in the sense that he has quoted the CPA, Consumer Protection Act. I don't think there's any honourable member in this House who is not aware that CPA, there's a specific commissioner under the Department of Trade and Industry dealing with the Consumer Protection Act. And correctly so, Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes are in that space. FSB is not in that space. You have heard about the problems of the commissioner and all, but that tells you the staff is within that space, not the FSB space. That's the holistic answer that I appreciate the honorable member gave. Then I go to the question of, do we have enough powers? In law, you can never dream to have all the powers that you have. Because the moment you create law, these people will find out how to go around this legislation. But having said that, the 14 pieces of legislation that are given to the FSB to implement, including the five legislation. Remember, you're talking pensions, you're talking markets, you're talking all sorts of things. Under those laws, I do concede, like any piece of legislation, there will be gaps from time to time, because legislation is nothing but the rules that seek to regulate the behavior of people, and the behavior of people does change from time to time, and therefore you require amendments. As far as those pieces of legislation are concerned under the FSB, other than coming from time to time for an amendment to push that whole agenda, we are compliant as a regulator and we've done what needs to be done. However, one committee member raised the issue of the shame access, and he gave a number of examples of what has happened. We accept that. That those things happen. But can they be pinned to one piece of legislation that is FSB? The answer is not. However, the people involved in this type of things, the shareholders, for example, the brokers involved in that, they fall under the FSB jurisdiction. And there it's where action must be taken by the FSB. And we have seen that the Vice Ombud, specifically on the Shemex, she's issuing determination after determination. against what people did to Shemex. Because the question and the honorable member is correct in saying, what has the FSB done with those brokers who are involved in the Shemex? Even though the concept is still somewhere, but the people involved are supposed to be regulated by the FSB. And what did the FSB do? I'm not here to claim that we've done everything that we supposed to have done. We did that, but there were shortcomings in other areas, and we have to consider that we cannot run away from that. Then there was the issue of, again, under, do you have powers? Are you sleeping? Are you huffing and puffing? What is the link? What is the twin is going to assist in this whole matter? One thing that the Twin Peaks is going to achieve is we are going to draw a clear line, which of us is blurred at the moment. You don't know from time to time what falls where, whether CPA, whether it's the banks, whether it's the FSB. Things just seem to be moving in the crisis. What the Twin Peaks is going to do is going to be saying, FSB going forward, the potential wing of your regulation, that is the financial soundness of institutions and entities, is moving away. Your business is going to be the protection of consumers and nothing else, by way of how the providers of whatever service conduct themselves in that product. And that will include that. We're going to move away from the notion of FSB doing non-banking regulation as SAP doing the banking. We're removing that. It's going to be total conduct in the financial space. FSB must take responsibility. So I will not come back here and say that conduct of that person didn't fall within the FSB. Twin Peaks is doing away with that. Things should not fall between the cracks. Potential support takes that response. As it stands now, it's very difficult to pin people down. Then, of course, Jerry will answer the abandonment and the one member said the investigation, the Pretoria's matter was reported earlier and time was taken, all that. Jerry will report on that. The Twin Peaks issue, the one entry point. The idea there is that if you don't have an entry point, you're still going to have people operating within the financial sector unlicensed. We're hoping that with that single entry point, every entity, individual that enters there will have to be licensed. And anybody who's not licensed, who's not gone through that point, and that point is nothing but a fit and proper point. You go in, you still apply for the license that you want, the kind of business you want to do, but there is the fit and proper. And there are going to be many requirements. Many of the people that we are having problems with today and entities that we are having problems with today, they may not necessarily get through that entrance when that time comes. Because one is going to be faced with a situation of saying, I know your history. I know what you've been doing to the consumers out there before this time. How do I allow you in here? How do I allow you in here?
Sorry to interrupt, Chair. This is very vague. I was asking specifically, what is the current framework of these entry points that drives you to want to change? That's all.
I wasn't coming to that one, Chair, but I can jump quickly. The current system, honorable member, you license anybody who comes forward, and you check fit and proper at that point, and that's done. There is no continuation of checking fit and proper. Now, and the current system, everybody gets it. There's no checker point. I'm going to pay that checker point.
The FSB licenses them.
Sorry? FSB is not licensing them.
No, Chidi, wait. Can we avoid dialogue? Let's allow... No. Let's allow them to respond to all the questions. If they are follow-up, raise your hand. Go through the chain.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable member, at the moment, there are many entities and individuals who operate in the financial space who have been licensed by the, take the banking side. They have the license to conduct banking business. No one has ever checked fit and proper how consumers are protected. There's forever shouts about fees, banking fees in South Africa being so high. There's no one doing that. Intrinsic space, because that is a question of conduct. FSB, the market conduct regulator, is going to have to check that. Then there was the issue of the constitutional issue and the what provision are we quoting. I think in the constitution, we all have the right to participate in the economy of the country, to make a living. But that right, that's the right we're going to be probing and say, is that the right absolute to the extent that you group people simply because you've got the right to make a living within the economic space? We're going to have to interrogate that. It's a constitutional right, but it cannot be absolute at the expense of other citizens' rights. I'll give now Jerry to answer the, to respond to the payment tutorial in the Avante manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to the question about list of offenders and debarments. Yes, we have got a list. It's available. You get a name and an ID, you can put the name in the ID and it would say he's debarred for 2 years, or she's debarred for 5 years, or he's debarred for 7 years, and that person can't get a license. So the suggestion that we don't keep lists of people that have been taken out of the industry by way of punishing them for wrongdoing is incorrect. The FSB, Chair and Honourable Members, is not a product regulator, except for CIS. On the CIS portfolio, we don't say this product is allowable or not, but we put down parameters to which each portfolio that applies for recognition or authorization, scaling requirements, maximums, minimums, how much liquidity there should be, etc. Particularly and up to now, the FSB has not regulated hedge funds. This is not an excuse. Hedge funds, the need to regulate hedge funds came about after the 2008 financial crisis, the G20 and the World Bank, the IMF, that decided that OTC derivatives must be regulated, hedge funds must be regulated, and we are busy complying with the international requirements. The introduction of hedge fund regulation is by the FSB is nearly finalized and will probably come into operation during 2013. The RBAF Trust of Herman Pretorius was a hedge fund. Relative Value Arbitrage Fund. It was a hedge fund. It is unfortunate the way he, it's coming to light, the way he went about soliciting investment, were secretive as referred to by the registrar, but it wasn't. His investment scheme in inverted commas, was not a regulated scheme. It was not needed to be regulated. So the comments that the FSB should have woken up, or they are lame dog, and we've got a lot of complaints from investors. What does investors go in the first referred to the trust deed, the RVA trust deed was signed on the 29th of March 2004. I have it here. It refers to the beneficiaries of this trust, this relative value arbitrage fund. The beneficiary are the investors. The first beneficiaries are the investors' names that are next to the trust. Just for interest sake, there were 494 investors with a total of 77,962,000 odd. Says also the beneficiaries, the trust deed says the beneficiaries will change as new investors come in, and the beneficiaries will be updated from time to time. See, I think the criticism is unfair. Five looks at the conduct. It's a market conduct piece of regulation. It does not regulate product. And if a broker, whether he was a Chemex, and whether he was somewhere or another scheme, Kings didn't have brokers registered with the FSB, Chemex did. But the registration in terms of FICE looks at the conduct of the broker. It doesn't look at, does the scheme go bust? It looks at the conduct of the broker. When the broker introduced this product, so-called, to the client, did he do a needs analysis? Did he explain the costs? Did he disclose, did he do a due diligence? Absolutely did. So the broker is entitled to and must have the knowledge to be able to explain to the client what is necessary. Besides the fact that the RVAF trust, and there was another trust called the Avante Trust or the Avante Trust, which is similar, put together by Mr. Pretorius. The inspection is being finalized as we speak. The question can always be asked, should we have inspected it? We're just trying to try and find out what really happened there. We're not saying we should have regulated it, because we don't think we should have regulated it in the first place. I also think it's unfair to throw Leader Card, Sedentia, Avante, Pretorius and King all into one basket. Mr. Brown's down the road here being in his criminal trial the second day. Ponzi schemes are fraught. It's extremely difficult. It's not impossible to detect that there's going to be fraud happening in a scheme that usually starts out, as Mr. Chidi said in the main presentation, as an honest scheme. Whether it's the scheme here with the Bloberg Hotel, it's the same thing. And it usually Ponzi schemes start with, and this is our experience, Mr. Chidi and I have got 40 years regulatory experience between the two of us, start out as a genuine attempt to make money, 40 years. And so, Jay, I think we've covered the issues of Mr. Chidi. Thank you.
You want to make a follow-up, Chidi?
I think we covered, then we'll take further questions.
Thank you.
I think it is more positive now for me, for instance. And I just would like to know, if the FSB is not a product regulator, as you said, should we have one then? Do you want to be a product regulator? You know, that's my question. Firstly, if you don't want to be it, who should be it? And then, if we cannot regulate RVAD trust or Avante trust or whatever, if you can't regulate it, who should regulate it? And finally, don't you think we need legislation where a Ponzi scheme is be founded to be one? All brokerage must be paid back. All undue profits made by that investment should go back
Can you legislate that? If you do that, you will see the last Ponzi scheme in South Africa. If the liquidators are doing their job or whatever. But we cannot leave this since I've just mentioned even those things that happened before FICE, the leader guards, the Tyrions. You know, it was showing up that there's something wrong. Then FICE came. And we saw wrong. What should we do? Not necessarily you, but what would then the industry do?
No, wait. Honorable Harris, you wanted to make a follow-up?
Thank you. The point that I was asking about, because I needed clarity in the middle of the answer, was that there are several entry points into the financial sector, because you have different structures and different regulators, quite appropriately so. I mean, I think if somebody applies for a banking license, I'm pretty sure the Registrar of Banks would be surprised to hear that the view is from the FSB that there's no one checking whether that fits and proper. I think it's quite a thing to say. I don't understand why you would want a single entry, given that, you know, somebody selling insurance products has a very different regulatory requirements to somebody setting up a full-service bank. So the point about the regulatory system we have to build is not that there's one single regulator, one single entry point, is that there aren't any gaps, and I think that's part of what we're trying to do under Twin Peaks. But I'm very uncomfortable with the idea that we need some single door of entry. I need a lot more clarity there. And I'm pretty sure, Chair, if we had the Registrar of Bank here, for example, he would probably take quite a lot of offense to the allegation that people with banking licenses are not verified to be fit and proper. Then this idea that we were asked, or we were told that we need to find a constitutional way for maintaining a list of offenders, but then we were also told that you do maintain a list of offenders. I need some more clarity here. What in the Constitution prevents you from doing what you want in terms of lists of offenders? Did I miss something? And lastly, Chair, my sense of this session is that it's really just raised a whole lot of other issues, and we need to, I think, bring in the Reserve Bank and perhaps the DTI, because they're responsible for the Consumer Protection Act, and try and work out exactly where the gaps are currently and how, in the legislation we're drafting in the coming years, we can fix them, because there was a lot of passing the buck quite legitimately, perhaps. I mean, it might not be your responsibility. It might fall under the DTI or the Reserve Bank. But then let's get all three before us so that they can tell us about their respective responsibilities, and we as legislators can make sure that the laws are designed to support all three institutions in their respective jobs. But there were too many questions raised that the FSB can't answer, perhaps because these issues do fall under the CPA and the Reserve Bank. But, Chair, I would suggest we need to have a follow-up session.
Thank you, Chair. Let me deal with the issue of regulation of products, which we don't do currently, and that's the international position. But going forward in the Twin Peaks space, we've asked ourselves exactly the same question, Honorable Member. Should we regulate products? Should we not? We don't have the answer, but the inclination at the moment, and Honorable Members, Twin Peaks it's been put in place in terms of the mandate you've given out there, and I'll come to the institution and Twin Peaks. We are now saying perhaps the regulators must get involved at the stage of the creation or the design of products. There's no way that the regulator is going to continue
standing aside and say, I don't agree with products. There's got to be an amount of involvement. And that involvement could well be, yes, we're going to regulate products like we're doing anyhow in the CI space. And the other view is, we want to see how this product is designed, and we want to approve it upfront so that we can monitor it. That is what we're thinking about for the Twin Peaks. But indeed, the product issue is a problem, and the member is spot on. The penalty is that if you get involved in the Ponzi scheme, the proceeds that you get from the Ponzi scheme, there has to be something to be done. We cannot just close the Ponzi scheme and leave you run away with the money. If we can, we have to get it. And that practice is done within the markets. If you manipulate, pass manipulation, if we catch you, and of course we'll catch you, it's everybody who was affected by your action of manipulating the price. Whatever you got at that point gets taken back and shared, given back to the people who were affected by what you were doing. And I think the same concept has to be the Ponzi scheme, and that's the only way to do it. But it's not only, it shouldn't only be a question of taking back what would have made out of people's money. On top of that, there's got to be a stiff penalty. Bring back what is taken from the people and be penalized. So that in no time, and the sooner we do this, the better, because that's the only way. The constitutional issues, honorable member, as I said earlier, and I hope I'll be clear now, as I said earlier, every citizen of the country has a constitutional right to take part in the economic activities of the country to make a living. That's the provision. But that right cannot be exercised at the expense of other citizens. In other words, do participate, but do it in such a manner that you do not infringe other people's rights by either stealing their money, deceiving them, or that. That's what we are trying to say. Now, to put a list of, and make it public and say, this is, we are likely to get challenges. Now, we want to be prepared that when we do get constitutional challenges, we should be able to defend it and say things like it is in the public interest and all that. So it's just a question to say, whatever you do, you need to take account of the fact that there's a constitution that is in existence. We are not, honorable members, passing the buck here about single entry and all that. The captors of Twin Peaks are the Reserve Bank, National Treasury, FSB, and we involve DTI, CPA Commissioner, and the National Credit Regulator. We all agree that people in our entities do get licenses to perform specific issues. When you apply for a bank license, for instance, as the minister, as the honorable member said, the kind of questions you will be asked will be qualifications, experience, systems. But the one entry, the requirement there is fit and proper of the people that are going to be doing what the entity is going to be doing. That is the difference. And we all agree, for us to be able to say we have a handle on how providers of service are going to conduct themselves, which are people, we've got to make sure that the right people enter through that entry. And it is not to say what the bank or insurance company is going to ask from when you eventually apply for that license is to say you're not fit and proper. They will know that you've gone through the fit and proper. It will be more than just fit and proper on the basis of prudential regulation. Now we're saying the fit and proper has also to satisfy the requirement of market conduct regulator. And there are instances, you'll see in the 20s when we eventually come before Parliament, there are instances where licenses are going to be issued together, right, the entities sitting together to consider. register an application so that we track and stop this regulatory arbitrage that is taking place in the country at the moment. And we welcome the opportunity to come here with the SAP and other institutions that are involved in the crafting of the treaties. Thank you very much.
I don't see any hand for follow-up questions. I think the Honourable... Oh.
Yes. If we,
come in.
With your permission, if I may. On the Honourable Harris's question about the Consumer Protection Act and giving not a little but much protection and prohibiting because it comes from the old harmful business practices act. A lot of that is in there. That certain conduct by people engaging in business is just prohibited. We not argue that. The problem with Ponzi schemes is very wide. A lot of it may be contravention of the Bank Act. As mentioned previously, it may be fall. It may not be a contravention of the Banks Act, but it may fall under the CPA. The CPA stands; it's powerful and it should be followed. But for instance, what may not be known generally is these property syndication schemes. The promoters of property syndication schemes were regulated by the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of a notice under the Business Practices Act. And I don't know if there's ever been tested by that regulator whether the promoters acted in accordance with that notice. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, I think we've exhausted the presentation in terms of questions of clarity and comment. From where I'm sitting, I think there's a greater need to have an interaction between and amongst the institutions that are affected by the challenges that consumers from time to time come across. All and above economic actors in that phase. But obviously as we move on, I think the picture will become more clearer with the Twin Peaks. Market conduct vis-a-vis potentials. I think it will become even more clear as we move on. Having said so, honorable members, I think I should thank you for your robust engagement with a very limited topic at the present moment. Let's take this at the next 5 minutes to stretch our legs. I see there are some cookies there. I'm sure there's tea outside. I'm not sure.